Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest live episode of Vox Vomitus.
So live that
we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. As you can see, we do not have a guest, but that
is okay.
We did a minute ago. He'll be back. My name is Jennifer Ann Gordon. I am the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel, Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly, and the recently released The Japanese Box and Other Stories. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs, Since September, Move on, Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Our guest, when he pops back in...
He was here.
We promise you. This is not like a Big Bird talking about Snuffleupagus. He was here. It is David Scott Hay, the author of NSFW.
It stands for what it stands for. And just a little chat here before David joins us again, which hopefully if you keep seeing me look down, I'm looking to see if he's like having issues and anything I can do to help get him back on here.
Right.
I was worried that I was going to get flagged trying to type that in. So I was using like different emoticons and little emojis.
I saw that.
One of them, I'm like, ooh, I have jellyfish, which if you've read the book is perfect. But sadly, not all of my platforms offer that as an emoji choice, which makes me very sad to know that jellyfish aren't as prolific. And Elisa says, hey, vixens, and David, when you get back. And Elisa, he really was here. So Elisa, thank you for joining us. And David is in LA. We were just chatting about that. So I don't think he's got any really crazy weather. It's gray here. We shouldn't have anything weird going on today, but we've had weird stuff in my house where we've had people coming along and having cherry pickers doing stuff to the power line. So it's very exciting today.
It could be a very exciting episode. I already messaged Allison before we went live. Yes. So I live in the Northeast and a very rural area, and they're cutting down all the trees that may or may not fall during a giant storm. Mm-hmm. So lo and behold, right outside my house, they're chopping down trees that are like leaning precariously against wires.
It's like, they know when it's showtime and they're like, can we be bothersome right now? That would be fun. Let's make your dog go crazy. Okay. There's David popping back on. It's his device not connected. So I'm just going to give it a second till his face shows up and then I'll add him back in. There he is. Dramatic entrance.
Ta-da! See, everybody, we told you he does exist. We weren't just making it up. David Scott Hay, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning. Yes, 10 minutes backstage, absolutely no tech flaws whatsoever.
40 seconds before we go live.
And then
exactly. For people watching us live and or listening to us on the replay, literally 30 seconds before we went live, first Allison froze, then David froze, then I froze, then David was gone, and then voila, you've seen the rest.
I had a total shutdown. I completely shut down and restarted.
Computer's just like, you know what, here's some updates. Bam.
I know.
Too many words already.
So David, we have introduced you and the title of your book, but if you could tell our viewers and listeners a little bit about yourself and then a little bit about NSFW.
And hold on. I don't know if Scott Storm is trying to introduce you because he just says, hey, like he's telling us how to pronounce your name. This is one we got without help, but thank you, Scott.
he's a bit of a stalker.
Oh.
I'll block him.
No.
It's Scott,
Scott's a dear friend and a collaborator.
Hi, Scott.
Although I may have just added him as a collaborator. That's, no telling what list we'll end up on now.
I think you mean co-conspirator. And as your lawyer, I say, probably don't say that out loud for future indictments. Go on.
Following the advice of my lawyer. My name is David Scott Hay. Currently wearing the novelist hat. My latest book is NSFW, which came out, I believe, this February or so. It's a speculative sci-fi near future techno horror book. One of my favorite reviews says it's half techno horror, half workplace romance, and 100% unhinged.
Yes.
I was like, okay, thank you.
Correct.
Take that.
Who needs a Kirkus review when you can get reviews like that?
Well, as it was, when I was trying to put this into to let people know what they were going to experience, I was just like, techno thriller, horror, future. I don't know what this is. And then I ran out of space, so I gave up. So if you figure it out in a really short nutshell, let me know.
Well, you know, being out here, because I live out here in LA, you know, it used to be passe to do the movie comparisons, but now it's kind of come back in vogue because of everybody's short attention span. So it's The Office. The Office meets A Clockwork Orange. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be enough for people to go, yes, I would like to read that, or to go, no, thank you.
Well, that, and we were also comparing it to Severance. And yeah, there's like a bit Severance of that. I don't know if everybody who's seen Severance, and don't mind me playing musical chairs. Something just moved, and I just moved David back to the hot seat.
Yeah, I thought of it as like Chuck Palahniuk wrote Severance, but even a little darker. And a little funnier.
A lot darker.
Yeah, so. And the Kirkus Review had mentioned that, you know, the tonal mimicry, which is, you know, not inaccurate at all. I've got, you know, most of his books, and Fight Club was, you know, a book that, you know, when I read back in the day, really resonated with me. Like it did a lot of
a lot of weirdos.
Time.
Also females.
And females, but you know, the focus is more on, you know, fathers and sons, and, you know, and growing up fatherless, and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, having the TV as a surrogate. So that really resonated with me. And I also just like somebody say, it was, he's like, oh yeah, his style is edging research. You know, it's just sprinkled with factoids and things like that, which I like. And I thought with Not Safe for Work, the style lent itself to that, because it's, I'd say it simulates a scroll feed, but it does, you know, you're scrolling through and you get headlines, mm-hmm. and you get tidbits, and depending on what you like, you could have, you know, this is how you knit a sweater, and this is how you field strip an AK-47. And it's
did
just
you
all
knit
like,
your
oh.
own sweater? Cause I didn't knit mine, but I feel like we were both cold today. Cause as Californians, we don't know what to do when it's below 70.
I know. I just wore this cause I like the color pink pops, and black t-shirts would just blend in. So
I know. I'm like, I am trying to be warm.
Yeah, we're all freezing. It's good. But yeah, we were actually talking beforehand because Jennifer was saying she ordered a physical copy of the book because she wants her husband to read it, and he wants to do audio. And we're like, we need you to see it. And there is an audio. So I'm sure the audio is amazing, but there's so much visual that happens in this with the page breaks and things blocked out. And even how people's names are written that I'm going, how would you say that?
Yeah, and like phone, is it F1? Is it phone? How? Like,
we still don't know.
I know. Exactly. And that's why I was like, I don't want to know.
Face?
The good news is the audiobook is complete. I've got to do a QC listen to it. And I'll tell you, my co-conspirator, collaborator, Brian Allen Hill, we worked in Chicago for a number of years with our theater company. And, you know, I knew he would be the person I'd want to do the reading. And he read it and actually took over the engineering and like, did the creative direction on it. So it is, I hate to say this because I love selling the books, but it's probably going to be my preferred method for, I think, people ingest it, because it is the soundscapes, the music cues, it's you
well
know,
it's
now
like
audio
I'm gonna
theater.
Have, it's gonna be music cues. This is gonna be
music,
one of those
sound
books
cues.
That I have it in every format. Yeah. I'm gonna have the paperback, I have the ebook, and I will. Now that you're saying this, my husband will have to listen to the audio.
I'll send you guys a couple of samples. Like I said, I'm getting ready to start that process of getting it uploaded, starting the pre-sales and stuff. But it's the things I was hearing from it was like, oh, wow, I think for some people, the experimental form can always be off-putting. There's some people that really gravitate towards, and I gravitate towards it. But I think hearing it, because you know, it alternates big voice, little voice, you're getting factoids, mm-hmm. you know, interwoven with the narrative. Like there's a sound quality difference in that when you're listening to it. So it's kind of almost easier to track. And I'm thrilled to death with it. And I can't wait to get that.
I love it. I know. So
for your ears, what your eyes are doing. So depending on what processes better for you, go with that. It's not everybody. Some people are like the eyes, it gets crazy. And other people are like, my ears can't follow.
Yeah, but I have a horrible time with audiobooks because I'm like, oh, that was a nice phrase. That remind me of this, that, and then you know, 5 minutes later, I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh, I wasn't
about
listening.
It? You know?
Yeah. And I'm the same way, but I'm an audiobook addict. But then I also have preferences between which ones let me back up by how much, because I need to back up and go, okay, where did I just wander off into another place and have to go back and figure out, okay, there are certain books I've listened to certain sections over and over because I keep wandering off in the same point. And apparently I don't learn.
I wonder if writers have a harder time with that, you know,
not because just, we start, you know, thinking ADHD, about
it. Thinking like, that's a great phrase. Oh, that's, I never thought of wording something like that. Oh, I wish I had written that. And then you're like,
right.
Wait, when is
the next thing you know, Benedict Cumberbatch is on about the tower. And you're like, what?
You know, I'm like, what's that, happening yeah. now?
That and he's trying to pronounce penguins and can't. That's my favorite.
Well, and I tell you one thing about the you're talking about needing the physical book too is, I know I'm talking to me yet, and we're going to be issuing the EPUB version, but I don't think we're going to be doing a Kindle version of it because of the formatting. Mm-hmm. You know, with EPUB, you can stay, the formatting isn't changeable, and you know, I'm sure Kindle it's to change the font and
yeah.
the size and all this other stuff, which is good for the Gen X eyes, but at the same time too, if formatting is part of the presentation, then it just goes right out the window.
Yeah, you need that. But we both were so floored by your book. Like, to say we loved it is, it's still, it sounds weird to say we loved it because we're like, we probably shouldn't say we love some of the stuff that happens in this.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Like,
no. What's the right term of appreciation and admiration without saying like we condone the content?
I mean, I did love it. I loved like it. I would, and I don't want to give spoilers at all.
That's okay. We can talk a little bit about it. Yeah.
Can we just talk about the lactorium a little bit?
Can we not?
Because I have to say, it reminded me.
I was going to drink my cherry maca mocha and just tune out.
So the lactorium reminded me of Augustine Burroughs' memoir, Running with Scissors, because they mm-hmm. always referred to a room as the masturbatorium. And then when all of a sudden there was a lactorium, I'm like, oh, nothing good can happen here.
Yeah.
What's funny about all of that is the fact that they have a lactorium, and everywhere I've ever worked has never had mm-hmm. anything appropriate for actual lactating mothers who want to have a place mm-hmm. to either breastfeed or pump. That, I kid you not, and this is so TMI, but we're past the 10-minute mark. Nobody cares.
Sure.
And between my child turning 1 and 2, and my husband was a teacher, is a teacher, whatever, and my baby would not take a bottle. So he would have to have my child come to my office, and I would have to go out to the parking structure. He would take her, hand her to me, and I'd be sitting on my lunch break nursing this child because there was no place to actually nurse the child. So the idea that this yeah. place that, as far as we can tell, has no mothers in it, has a lactorium. And I'm just like, I both love it and cringe and don't even like, and how it's actually used and...
Well, and to be fair, you know, the moms would probably still have to go to the parking structure because
it was in use.
Yeah,
that was in use a lot.
I worked several years ago. I worked in an office where, you know, we changed office and had, you know, something, you know, newly built out. And we had one of those like little break room lactoriums. And at 12:20 every day, I would double check with the women that sat next to it. I was like, all right, I need 20 minutes. Is everybody good? And I would go in there and take a power nap. Because I usually work through lunch, but it was like the mm-hmm. 20 minutes where I knew I could get away and so get caught up on everything.
Wait, so you actually can power nap? Because I sometimes think people who can power nap, that's just an urban legend and that doesn't actually exist. But you could shut off and be recharged in 20 minutes?
I don't know about recharging, but that 20 minutes of silence and then the phone not ringing was bliss.
I was going to say, that's maybe it was just a sanity thing mm-hmm. where you're like, I just need to go, like in a sensory deprivation tank.
So yes, for him, it was the naptorium. I like the naptorium.
Well, my old boss was, you know, he's one of those like, hey, can you come in here? Like he would write his emails in block text. And he was like, yeah, they're complaining about it on the other end. Can you show me how to like add some spaces here? I mean, it's that kind of level of like, yeah, you go over here and you hit return. It's not really enter, but you know, this is, yeah, it got to be a little much.
That's my old boss who we had to print out his emails for him because he didn't know how to read them. So he had to read them like they were physical.
I had a boss like that as well.
Yep.
Every morning, print out the emails. And then she would, because she didn't understand mm-hmm. how to use her emails, would just mm-hmm. write physically on the emails and then hand them back to me. And I would type them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and
yeah,
I'm like, I feel like this is not the job description when I accepted the job. And
once he found out I was a writer, I was proofing his kids' college essays and stuff.
But hey, did they get in?
They did. They all got in. Our understanding was that if I was caught up on work, I would be working on my novels.
Hey, you know what?
He would also slip me extra stuff. So. Yeah, absolutely.
It's all good. It's all good. Once they find out you're a writer, everything's over. Just give up.
Everything goes to
yeah.
off you go. But. You weren't working on this at work, were you?
No, I was working on this during lockdown and
And missing going was to a job.
Not a fun right. It really wasn't.
I can't imagine it being fun.
I'd started it. I'd pitched it to Miette right when Miette's my publisher at Whiskey Tit. We had done the deal for The Fountain and, you know, I had that moment of like, oh shit, she might want to follow up, right? I don't have a follow up.
I have no idea.
I'm working on, well, I was working on a middle grade series because I was like, I'm going to go YA this time. And
for the record, NSFW is not YA.
No, nor is it a beach read.
No,
but it gives a lot to think about. So I was working, I was probably halfway through when the lockdown happened. And, you know, you can ask my wife, I was like, I'm going into my office to escape and to write. And I'm writing about, you know, Savage and Juniper who are isolating from tech. And,
and that's all we had during lockdown was our tech.
And that was really like, I took a little bit of time off in there and, you know, and fortunately, you know, Miette was really encouraging. My wife is a screenwriter and she's super encouraging and understanding. And it was just like, wow, this is really odd to be writing about this stuff. And there's other stuff, you know, if you've read NSFW, like there's stuff in there that I wrote, you know, a couple of years ago that have like come to pass.
Yes.
And that has been.
Yeah, there are certain things that I'm like, was this written before or after this actual event did happen? Because there are certain parts where I'm just like, did you know about the haircut? Because I feel like that haircut.
Afterwards. And
oh boy, for people who have ever read, they're like, what? But it would make sense. Lots of things that are like, there are never anything specifically named, but you're like,
it's not a spoiler, but you know, Russia rears its head in there as a, you know, as a component of the plot. And when I was writing it, I was like, you know, I grew up in the Cold War, so it was like, you know, they use Russia, it's passe, blah, blah, blah. You know,
and then all of a sudden it's not.
And I was in the middle of negotiating the deal for with Polyandra New Age for the Russian version of The Fountain when the war broke out. And then, you know, and of course, you're always hoping if somebody prints one book, they're going to print your second book. And I was like, there's no way they're going to touch this book.
Probably not this one, no. Mm-mm.
And they did.
Do you think they read it? Do you think they read it? Or do you think they were just like, oh, we want
to. I have a debate with my wife that I don't think they did. I don't think they read it.
Maybe the beginning.
I was going to say, maybe not the second half.
I don't know, but they're very progressive. Like they just started an imprint with young Russian authors, you know, about like what's going on today and trying to educate young people. So they're, you know, I would say, you know, part of the resistance.
Yeah. So they are not a government run press. Let's just clarify.
No, absolutely not. And it was interesting getting, you know, kind of boots on the ground, you know, what's going on there with, you know, their friends and family and things like that. And they were all horrified the war, because they all have friends in Ukraine. They were talking about, you know, all their friends without kids were, you know, packing up and moving, all these jobs disappeared and just, you know, it's like war on the street.
Right. And people like lost like control of their bank accounts. They weren't allowed to access money. They weren't allowed to access the internet without a VPN. So like they were really trying to control the news cycle, which again, if, you know, NSFW deals a lot with those themes. Mm-hmm. You know, writing during the pandemic was weird, I think, for everybody. And we've talked to a lot of people, myself included, that we were just like, uh-oh, did we predict this? Are we like the Simpsons? Did we? Because
you have an issue with that because of your book with like, hey, do people want to read stuff with masks?
I know, because I had been writing a book about a virus that makes people's faces rot off and they had to wear masks because they were disgusting. And then I'm like, oh, uh-oh. And people are like, is this about COVID? I'm like, no. No, it's not. It's weirder.
It's and more, super herpes.
It's like super herpes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. I had a buddy of mine had optioned, he had written a graphic novel and had optioned it to one of the big networks, I think. And it was called The Bunker. And of course, it was about, you know, an outbreak. And then, you know, like, 90 days later, he's like, gone. It's gone.
This is not what we maybe want. right this moment. Well, and it is funny because, okay, so for people who are like, what are you guys talking about this book and NSFW? And it does stand for what you think it does, but it's about this person who we never get their actual name. We say it's Savage, right? Like that. Botching how those letters become?
No, it took me a while
to figure that out. I'm like, oh, that's spelled Savage. All right. Who actually has a job that I knew someone who had a job like this, but this was at least 15, if not 20 years ago, where their job was screening things and basically searching for things on the internet and removing it. Now things are different now and how that is done, but I'm like, really? So you basically you sit around searching for porn, and it's not just porn because there's lots more going on, but the idea that it's a whole group of people who that's their job and that's where they are and how they interact and what the work culture is like there and what the people then do to get away from that and what it's done to their sanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, for people that don't know the book, I guess I should give the premise of it.
Yep.
Two social media moderators start this job at a company called Vex. And the big carrot is if they survive 90 days, they get health benefits and this mystery bonus, which is quite nebulous. So, you know, that's the overall, you know, plot kind of hook. But really
I'll say it's a great plot because I would have done anything for health insurance many times in my life,
you know, and it rattles, you know, talks about like, you know, maybe the mystery bonus will be stock options or a 401k or, you know, insurance without a crippling deductible because, you know, when you go through and you take that, like, okay, I'll check the $5,000 deductible and hope nothing happens. But then, you know, as you get further in the book, there's, you know, there's hidden agendas with the people that are working there, that has to do more with, you know, outside the office, but, and it's about Savage and Juniper who, you know, like, how do you, you know, what does a love relationship look like in the age of trauma? Cause it's set near future ish.
It could be set today. Right
now. I'm like, are you sure it's future?
Yeah, there's so many things in there. And, you know, I talked to some other people and stuff, and I was like, you know, researching this book, you know, I read a lot of white papers. I read a lot of tech magazines. I read a lot of old, you know, stuff going back, you know, 15, 20 years, you know, like, where are we headed? Mm-hmm. So you need to just kind of extrapolate and, you know, every now and then you kind of get lucky and a couple of these things have happened. And, you know, there's a set piece, the big set piece in there, you know, just Israel and Hamas, right? That just, I was talking to Allison. I was like, holy shit. Like, you know, this is, you know, it's incredible, but
you didn't predict.
Yeah, it's not, no, it's not on me. It's not on me.
Not blaming you.
But it's crazy seeing these kind of things happen when you're trying to write about something that's going to happen, you know, near future, like far future. And
especially when you're calling it horror, which it is. And then you're like, oh, right, that's happening right now.
That's happening. So, now, you know, I mean, honestly, I blame the Cubs. Cause in 2016, they won the World Series. And 6 days later, you know, we had a president elected who didn't want to be president. And it's like, this is the universe trying to correct itself. So we are living in that alternate timeline of, you know, the Cubs having won
all
the
because
Series.
Of that goat curse. I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, the curse wasn't strong enough. If it had just been a little stronger, could have held back the tide.
They needed something larger than a goat. I mean, the goat only could hold on for like, what, 90 years or something like that?
Yeah. Needed a bigger goat. Damn it.
No, bigger goat or like some sort of bull.
Yeah. Instead of needing a bigger boat, we just needed a bigger goat.
Bigger goat.
Very sad. Very sad.
Very nice. Caught that.
Good one. Good one.
Stay in the goddamn boat, right?
Yeah. That and... So all the things that are going on in there, and you say set piece, and the first thing I think of is physical things, and I'm still mad because my husband bought like a stationary bike for here, and it still hasn't arrived, and I want Orca's bike, and I could just be doing this through the whole video and see if you guys notice, but I think I move enough. I don't think I'd be doing that too and have the squeaky wheel just keep going and going and going.
I know, now I'm thinking I should be on my, because I have a work exercise bike totally with a little desk. I could have done that, but my bike is squeaky, so the entire episode would have been like,
that, and then our producer would be trying to remove that later, and he's just like,
right,
I hate you.
Every other word.
I know, and he's already just like, Jennifer, your hair is too noisy.
Your hair is too noisy?
Yeah, it's because it, like, I wouldn't go that far, but it touches my mic.
I'm trying to help.
Yeah.
When I was working in an actual office space, I did have a cubicle neighbor who said, you type too loud and I need to get you typing booties. And I'm just like, how can I be typing? But apparently I type too loud. So
you were probably aggressively typing.
I probably was, but also this was back. I mean, I'm looking at my keyboard now that's pretty much flat. This is back when there were thick little buttons and you push and they make little clicking noises. And I think mostly he was just jealous that I typed a lot faster than he did because he was one of these guys.
My wife is an angry typist. When she's typing, it's like I've got 12 typewriters. Like, if you want to take it out on a typewriter, like, go ahead.
Because that is satisfying.
Yeah. Well, that's the rage that against the machine, satisfying. Right? That's what that means. It's about computers, mm-hmm. right? No?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I'll take it.
I don't think
a friend of mine tinkering on one of my, I was playing on one of my typewriters, and he goes, and he's a writer too. And he's like, I actually feel like I'm doing work. This is like, mm-hmm. feels like real work. I was like, yeah
you are. It like makes your arms a little tired. You're like, oh, I don't have to go to the gym.
The sound is so satisfying. The sound is so satisfying. Good. Like when you get a rhythm going, it's like you don't want that sound to stop. So you just keep typing.
Keep typing, keep typing.
All the monkeys on all the keyboards are writing their next novel right there. It's satisfying as they go.
So David, you were a playwright before, a screenwriter, mm-hmm. both? What is your process different than when you write a novel? What is it like? So I'm a former theater person who dabbled in a tiny bit of playwriting poorly and realized, I think I'm writing a novel.
The reverse. I started off writing novels in college, and then I pivoted to, because I'd done a little bit of theater in high school, I wrote a play, did pretty good, and then wrote another play, did really well. And then we loaded up the truck and we moved up to Chicago. So I did theater as writing and producing for about 15 years or so. And then inevitably, the film, everybody wants to, the 90s Sundance, and everybody's keeping track of, the indie thing and wanting to do their own. And I ended up having a play got picked up and turned into a movie. So then I was like, I'm going to do screenwriting now. And wasn't quite ready. And man, Hollywood is brutal on, any side of the equation. And I had a super big deal fall through. And I just pivoted back to novels because it was like, I don't need anybody else. It's just mm-hmm. me. It's my own time. It's on this. I don't have to run anything past anybody. And, I can work completely by myself until, of course.
I was going to say until
the querying
and then
all that comes through. But the process was different. Most of my plays were written longhand. I can't type fast enough to keep up, the dialogue in my head. So I have this weird shorthand that I write.
So you physically write faster than you type?
Yes.
Because you're shorthand. Okay.
Yeah, it's a brain thing. and the shorthand. But if I don't translate or translate the shorthand in like 36 hours, then it's like illegible.
And it's gone.
Right? Yeah, I don't know what that was.
It's gone.
Yeah, like I write poetry longhand. And again, mm-hmm. it's like a fake longhand. It's just, mm-hmm. Half symbols, words. Because I'm like, the ideas, they're happening. And it's same thing. Like, if it's not immediately transcribed, I'm like, what is that?
No idea.
Is that a P? Yeah.
Well, with plays, I wouldn't even write the characters' names, right? Because there's usually only mm-hmm. two or three. So you just write the dialogue in your head and you have to go back if you're at like, who's saying what, put the little name there and start it. It's arduous, but I found out it helped, keep the rhythm of a scene going.
Because you worked in a theater company, did you, when you found that you were writing plays, did you have like actors in mind that you could like hear their voice or?
No, but we got to the point, it took us a few years to break through, but we got to the point where we weren't really auditioning people. We were just calling them up and going, hey, you want to play? And they're like, yeah. And that was really great.
Well, I think what Jen means, because this is what we both do because we're terrible this way, is when we are writing, we cast our books. So not that they would actually agree to do any of this, but in mm-hmm. our heads, these are the people and these are their voices and doing all this. So like when Jennifer and I first connected, we were reading each other's books and both of us happened to have a character by the same name. And it's like, is yours Adam Driver? Mine's Adam Driver.
Yeah. I was like mine's Adam Driver when he was in Silence. Mm-hmm. Skinny and broken who's Adam Driver are you? Like,
yeah, which Adam Driver are you?
And they couldn't have been more opposite books.
Yeah.
Allison's mm-hmm. was a rom-com.
Mine was a rom-com.
Mine was grief horror.
Yeah. Yeah,
but they both start out of
trouble. When I worry about him needing to eat a sandwich because I'm worried about his internal organs because he hasn't eaten in like 6 months. It's like Andrew Garfield, you grew a beard. Adam Driver didn't eat for half a year. Yeah, totally same commitment. Totally same commitment. But yeah, just that hearing the voice, like who would, because I think one of the things that's interesting about how NSFW works is because of the perspective, we get a lot of views into the other characters, but almost horse blinders, and intentional horse blinders on who the main character is. So did you ever think like, who is this character in my head, or who would I cast him to play? Or honestly,
is this somebody I know?
You have him, he's the camera. Like, because it's almost like within the you is often addressed to Juniper, but it also could be you are Savage and everything is just from your perspective to the point where you don't get a lot of what is Savage really like, other than eventually we do get a little bit more of the backstory to understand how he ends up where he does and why he's doing what he's doing. And that totally caught me off guard. So bravo on that.
Right. Thank you. This one was a little different in that, I didn't want it to be first person, but it's that second person because like it's the narrator's telling the story. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, Savage, you know, as we know, has, you know, PTSD and has, you know, suffered an unknown trauma at this point and is part of it's kind of dealing with that. I didn't cast when I was writing it because I'd worked in a shitty office for a long time. And also just really, you know, I mean, we all put a little bit of our own characters in there, but for me, it was really during the, you know, pandemic and doom scrolling, and we've, you know, we've normalized school shootings and mass shootings and, you know, gun trauma. And a friend of mine, you see a lot of music shows, like, you know, big stadium shows, you know, club shows in Chicago. And there was an incident that happened overseas. And she just casually mentioned to me at one point that, you know, like, God, if we'd been that area, that's a show we totally would have been to. Mm-hmm. And I just like, oh my God, what would have happened? And that just really stuck with me. And then, you know, as you're trying to find a, you know, a story, another, you know, project, I started reading about the PTSD moderators, you know, or the social media moderators getting PTSD. Yeah. And I'm like, these poor bastards, you know, they've got PTSD. They've never been in a war, but they've got PTSD.
But they've seen the worst of humanity.
They're making minimum wage. Yeah. It's probably a temp job.
There you go.
And, you know, like so many people today, you know, and it, you know, mentions at the beginning there is like, yeah, we're all doing this because they hope that they can get a permanent job that might lead to this, might lead to retirement. And, you know, there's a lot of Gen Xers and everybody below Gen X is like, retirement is like,
is when you die
at your desk. And everybody's kind of resigned to that almost, that they're like, well, I'm just going to work until I die. And that's, you know, so it was just, I wanted to explore these things. Actually, I don't say it was a therapy book, but I wanted to explore these things and just, you know, see how preposterous they were and like what the, you know, where we're headed. And that kind of gave me a chance to, oh my God, if they're, you know, everything that I'm, you know, being inundated with on social media feeds and news feeds, everything is going to come through social media. And if you're a moderator, you've got the front row seat. So I could, you know, there's a little bit of thematic whiplash because there's just all many, you know, these things that are popping up that, you know, you can argue for, you can argue against. And, you know, what happens when people become so desensitized to it? You know, the, you know, gallows humor kicks in, you know, Cherry Makamoka, right? Exactly. You know, and, but it's not that far off. And I'll tell you one thing. I did a reading in Berkeley and this person, because I want to identify, came up to me in the line, and she didn't, you know, didn't have a book, which, you know, it's kind of unusual because people usually get in line to get the book signed and stuff. And she was like, were you a social media moderator? And I was like, no, but, you know, I read a lot and, you know, did my own personal soul searching of what this would be like. And she goes, well, you nailed it. She goes, I used to be a mental health coach at one of the big companies. And she goes, I was like, how was that? And they said, I didn't receive any training. Like, I got the job and you're like, here you go. And they told me about like, oh yeah, the laptop with all the, you know, child pornography was sitting on a table between two ferns, I guess, to make it look a little softer and a little less inviting. And I don't even have that in. I didn't even go there.
I feel like that is so dark that people would go, that's not realistic. But yeah, it is.
No training, because it's like, well, we got to have somebody in that role in case somebody asks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I understood why a book was not purchased.
No, and for them, it's like, yeah, there's the PTSD, and this book is the trigger, and I can, I can get that. But it's, I mean, it has everything, even if you take away what they're physically doing, because we mentioned Severance earlier, and one of the things on Severance.
Mm-hmm. Severance is brilliant, yeah.
Nobody ever knows what they're doing. Well, I'm moving these things over here, but I just, I feel like this is right, that you don't, we know what these people are doing, we know why they're doing it, and we as people who are on social media understand, and I've seen things just in the past couple of days that I'm going, how has this not been removed? And why is this still allowed on there? Because some of these things, I'm just like, this was just in my Twitter feed and didn't X, it's X now, whatever. But it wasn't one of those things that I expected to just see there. And the idea that there are people who remove that, but even taking that job part away, just the idea of being someone who is working towards this ephemeral goal of, I might one day get health insurance and I might one day be able to get sick, or the idea of retirement. I mean, you nailed it when you said it's not something most people in our generation or below think will ever be a possibility. So when the older generation starts saying, well, you know, if you have deferred gratification and da-da-da-da-da and then get all these things, and you realize there is nothing to defer to because the gratification will never come, that all of the mentalities of what we were supposed to do and the quiet quitting and all of this, it's like, yeah, because the system is so broken. And it was something I was even just telling to my almost 13-year-old about, the idea that, yeah, it's a problem when we live in a society where getting sick is something that can debilitate a family, and that not everybody is set up in such a way that you can just assume those things are taken care of. So the idea that the health insurance was such a big part of it, anybody reading this in a country that has socialized medicine is probably going to look at this and go, what?
Like, why can't you just go to the hospital? And it's like, even with insurance, it will bankrupt you.
Well, yeah, exactly. And not that their systems are necessarily perfect, because I've got friends who are waiting on things for months and months because that's when they can be seen, because of that's how the system is. But the idea that you don't have to make that cost-benefit analysis of, do I take my kid to the hospital because I think they have meningitis? Do I do that because I can't afford the copay right now, even though I'm insured? Like, that's crazy. Yeah. And then some people who don't have insurance at all. And the idea that there are these people who it's like, yes, I have this job, I am employed, but the idea of being employed and still not able to participate fully in society because it isn't enough. You know, I mean, I think the only thing that you had in there when you say was near future, I'm like, maybe we don't have quite as many drones. There's a drone on my roof right now because my 8-year-old didn't know how to fly it. Well, if anybody has a drone to remove it from my roof right now, I would actually love you to come by, or just a ladder would be fine. But that was probably the only thing that I felt like we don't have right now, is quite as many drones dropping stuff.
Yeah, that's about, well, let me tell you, teledildonics was not something I made up.
That was one of the ones that I tried to scrub right away from my head.
I know. So as I was reading it, I picked up my phone and I was like, I picked up my device and I Googled it as I was reading on my Kindle, and I realized, I'm like, I'm the people in this book, because I had two electronic devices in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it was interesting, tired.
I had a debate whether I was going to do the hashtags throughout or just keep them separate. And, you know, and some of them are, you know, made up, but the, you know, the list of
we don't want to know
government experiments on U.S. citizens.
I knew most of those.
And yeah,
I did.
These too.
Yeah.
I just assumed whatever I didn't recognize is because I just hadn't heard about it, but it probably was real.
Yeah. I knew a handful, but the more I read, I was like, holy crap. Like the New York subway ones. Like,
yeah, I Googled
that. That's the one that had the longest hashtag that I'm just like, why is this?
Yeah. Yeah.
This isn't a very good hashtag. It's like 5 lines long.
I thought, I'm like, this one wouldn't be able to fit on Twitter at all. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Right.
if you have a verified account, you get more characters. Obviously, Jennifer, get with the
program.
I can't even go to Twitter without getting a panic attack. So I would never be able to be a social media moderator.
I had a reference. One of the hashtags was X app, and I cut it because I guess a few years ago, Musk was talking about He wanted a social media app or an app that would rival WhatsApp, where you do everything on it.
Which is what,
and that was part of the takeover for, you know, Twitter. Some people were like, oh, you named it X. I was like, yeah, I saw this coming. But, you know, I was just like, fuck him. So I cut it from the book. There's too many other things in there.
I'll just move this one. We don't, there are plenty of other ones. It doesn't lose its impact without that. I mean, like, honestly, the only scene that I couldn't relate to is the urinal chat, because, you know, women, we don't have those.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's funny because it's like,
I'm like, I don't get to do those things.
You know, it's like, how do you get these three characters, you know, in a recurring, you know, in a runner, where do you put them there in their office? Like, I didn't want to do the copy machine.
Like, yeah. Okay. And I feel like these people aren't drinking a lot of water, so it can't be like the water cooler.
Right.
They're drinking a lot of other things.
Yep. Hydration is not really what their goal is.
No. Yeah. I mean, they've got some chemicals in their body, and that was the other thing. And it is funny because, and this is totally off topic, so I apologize, but the things that we have now that are not regulated. And I don't mean not regulated as in like text. I mean regulated as in what the hell's in it, and can they make whatever claims they want about it, and taking different supplements to do different things. And it's like, yeah, these people are like, we'd like a healthcare plan with pharmaceuticals that don't just come from this guy's desk. Like, that would be great. Like, I don't even know.
Well, to get FDA approval, I think it's like a million plus to get FDA approval. So a lot of these supplements don't do the FDA approval. But to get FDA approval, my understanding is it's like it only has to be like 30% effective.
Yeah, I think it's that, because I watched that really, really depressing miniseries on, I think, Hulu last year, which was called Dope Sick. And they talked about getting, you know, Vicodin and stuff, the FDA approval for that. And I was just so mortified at the whole thing, but mostly about that whole FDA approval process. I'm like, really? It doesn't need to be effective? Really? Right. The side effects, you can just not list them? What?
Yeah. Fine.
This is going to help 3 out of 7 people.
Exactly. And you just have to you hope you're one of the three. You don't know. And it's like the commercials where they say this and then fill in whatever name, and then they list all the side effects, and the side effects are just awful. Then you have to go,
it's like bleeding from the eyes, ears, and anus. Yeah.
What could be the condition that's so important to get rid of that you want to be bleeding from the eyes, ears, and anus?
Usually it's like balding.
Vanity.
It's just it's a wrinkle removing cream. It might make your ears bleed.
Did a commercial, you know, years ago, and you know, they parodied that, and one of the side effects was the condition known as hot dog fingers. And every time I see
where are hot dog fingers?
My kids ran off with mine. I think I just have lost. I'm knocking things over.
Oh, right. Everything.
We had a guest.
You see, there's my hot dog fingers box. Nice. My kids stole my hot dog fingers after I traumatized my 12-year-old with it, because she didn't know I had one on, and I knocked on the door and I freaked her out.
I know. We had a guest send those to us. He was a big Jamie Lee Curtis fan and Vince a collector of everything. So everything everywhere all at once. And I tortured my dog with my hot dog fingers. Yeah. I put them on, was just like, woo!
Yeah, no, my 12-year-old broke into tears, because you look at her funny and she just starts crying. It's, she's fine. Yeah. She's my most well-adjusted child there. Like, I don't know. But yeah, she did not know I had them. And when I knocked on the door and then did this at her, she just started sobbing. I'm like, I'm the worst mother. I thought it would be funny. It was not funny to her.
She'll have nightmares forever.
Well, that was all. She's also the kid that you can't scare to get rid of hiccups, because then she just starts sobbing with hiccups. So it's not any better. It's not at all. Yeah.
So before we wrap up, did you have to do a lot of research about jellyfish, or were you one of those people that somehow knew stuff about jellyfish to begin with?
I did a little bit of research, but this is funny. Their wife and I, you know, still do date night, and went out to a place here near Ventura, and there was a pet store next door. And I walked in, and it was the Day Glow jellyfish. Like, and I was like, "What?" And I was also like, "I want it.
I want one."
And then I started, you know, and I did my research on jellyfish, and was just like, "Oh yeah, they started injecting them with Day Glow colors because the miracle of a jellyfish isn't enough. Like, everything's being, you know." Rebranded.
Yeah, it's not good enough that they can just like regenerate themselves from like, if they get like very badly injured, they must glow in the dark like a lava lamp.
Yeah, and then you know that they're talking about, you know, they're trying to find some kind of a big pharma reason to, you know, use jellyfish, and that's you know, half the stuff you read is like, nope. And the other half is like, it's very promising. So
it's possible. You never know. I mean,
you never know.
I want to see what they're going to do with axolotls because mm-hmm. they're kind of everywhere right now. And they're mm-hmm. just cute. So people's like, everybody's got axolotls now. An animal that I didn't know existed 5 years ago.
Right.
Was a bunch of right. merch going.
Yeah.
All right. Sure.
I have a question for you. Did yes. you happen to read the Easter egg chapter?
The Easter chapter.
We both only skimmed it.
We started reading it because we both finished it last night, and I had an IEP this morning. And at first, I'm like, "Oh, does Adam misspell?" But they have the thing where it's got the it's the Aquarist of. I'm not even saying it right. Is it Aquarius?
Aquarius.
Or Aquarius? Okay. Aquarius. Like, I want to put more. I'm an Aquarius, so I want to make it the Aquarius.
the Virgo of Venus.
And he sees one in the sky, but that's about as far as I got. And we're like, okay. We're knowing it's in there because it's Ray Gunn and that name. I just can't get over that. Ray
I
Gunn.
Love it.
It's the book referenced throughout. Yeah, and then yeah, we're yeah, like, yeah. okay, we're going to read it afterwards because both of us were like, we don't want to have our brain in that part yet because we want to focus on this part because both of us finished the book yesterday. So
and then
like,
had to sit with it and we had a long discussion last night about all of the parts that made us have to stop reading and take a beat. I'm like, this is the part that led me to run to the refrigerator and get a big glass of wine.
Yeah, well, and that was part of it because so I had started reading it before Jennifer did, and I said, it's a number of pages, but it's not as long as it looks because of the spacing. But I said, but don't binge it because there are places you're gonna have to stop. Like you can't binge this. There are places you're gonna have to walk away and then come back to it, and then there are places where you can't stop because I know that there were certain points where I'm like, I need to go, but I can't go because I need to finish and know where this is going and get to a point where I can at least close the monitor safely.
Yeah, it's written like a bag of potato chips, but you know, sometimes those potato chips, you know, have very odd flavors, and you're like,
why was this one licorice?
This one is strange.
That's right. I probably like that. I like licorice.
I thank the estate of Raymond Gunn Sr. for letting me reprint chapter one of the Course of Ganymede. Of course, I wrote it. And I wrote that as a challenge to myself because I've done, you know, the metafiction and experimental fiction to see if I could do it without, mm-hmm. if I could write just a straight story, right? Mm-hmm. Without any of the bells and whistles and stuff. And I was at AWP last year and a guy that was getting his PhD in like science fiction came out and was like, oh, I love the book. And I was like, did you read that last chapter? He goes, yeah, I did. I spent hours online trying to find that book.
And,
I wrote it. I wrote it. And he was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
It was a good laugh, but he was like, God damn it.
So my husband's Russian and I asked him,
did he know?
Because at first I was just like, have you heard of Ray Gunn? Is this a real book? And he's just like,
the cover alone sells it because the cover is in there.
Exactly. Yeah, and he's just like,
for two covers in a book.
I know.
Well, but I hear you because I actually have had the same comment because so the book that my first book that came out, Dibs, had when I originally wrote it, it referenced some song lyrics. And then I'm like, yeah, I can't use those song lyrics. So I had mm-hmm. to pull all the lyrics out and mm-hmm. I ended up using lyrics for myself that I put in there. And then people are like, where can I get that song? Why don't I know the song? I'm like, sorry, I wrote that song. That is not a real song.
And yeah.
Because there's no song for them to go download. And my sister's like, this sounds like Champagne Supernova, is it? I'm like, no, actually, if you want the tune, it's The Night Begins to Shine from Teen Titans Go. So if you just watch our tune, it's probably fine. And you can sing it and you can hear it and it aligns to the beat, but it's only parts of it. It's not the entire thing. So they wouldn't be able to put the whole thing in. And they're like, why can't I find it? I'm like, it's not real.
One of my weaknesses is I'll slip in like a phrase or two from different songs in there. And the Fountain has got a bunch of them in there. And I think this one just had a couple. There's some stuff you just can't help but do.
Yeah.
But, like no one stopped me, so I did.
Yeah. I know.
Well, I'm glad you both read the book and
we loved it.
I did have a friend tell me that like, okay, this science fiction thing at the end needs you need to give space between it because it's whiplash going from this ending to that. So I put it in there as, you know, just an Easter egg, but it's fun to see like who actually gets around to reading it and who doesn't. Not that it matters, but here, and I got to tell you, this is, and I talked to Sadie Hartman about this.
If Mother Horror,
she's great. She was in town. We did a signing at Dark Delicacies here in Burbank a couple months ago. I was telling her, I was like, look, my Russian publisher is going to put out Not Safe for Work. So what that means is my fake Soviet era pulp sci-fi novel that I wrote, the Easter egg chapter, will actually be translated into Russia and printed in Russian. And I'm like, I think I'm good. Like, no matter what else happens, like, I'm good. Like, you can, like, you know, what's that guy, you know, the bar, what's his story? Ah, he wrote a fake Russian novel and the Russians published it. Like, I'm good. You know what I mean? Like, I'm good. I'm good from here on out. So that was,
that's been basically like a driving spy.
Dream.
I was going to say Snowden ain't got nothing on you, but Regina wants to let us know that she loves
Let Axel me tell you, like, when I email with the foreign rights editor over there, like, you know, initially, you know, the war breaks out. My wife took over the home office during COVID. And I put up a tent in the backyard with, you know, a mini fridge and artificial grass, and we have chickens. So I'm back, you know, in my flip flops, and the chickens are squawking at me. And she's like, "Yeah, war is happening, and this, that, and the other thing." And I'm just like, "Yeah, okay. What? How much can we say over email?" And then she started asking questions. I was like, "Okay, I'm just trying to keep, you know, not that I'm going to be on a list or anything, but you just never know."
But the chickens, you never know. The chickens,
the disparity in like what she was going through and my morning routine and flip flops feeding the chickens, and you know,
like our lives are not the same here.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
our lives are not the same here when you're like,
no, they're not.
And they're like,
and the difference, the disinformation over there is real.
Yeah. So, I mentioned this to David last night. I was like, well, my husband's brother was in Russia when the war broke out, and though he's a dual citizen, he could have come back to the United States, but his longtime partner could not because the United States said no Russians allowed. Yeah. So they went to Belarus. The cops found them in Belarus. They went to Turkey. There was bombings in Turkey. They went to Dubai. They went to Mexico. They're finally in the United States, but it was like a year and a half.
They finally let her in?
They let her in.
Okay.
They let her in. Yeah. In California, because
maddening. Yeah.
Well, that's where his parents are, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas my sister ended up somehow on a watch.
It's going to be horrific. It's going to be horrific.
Yeah.
You know, not knowing, you know, what country your loved one's in and fleeing this. And
yeah. I mean, he has family in Israel right now. And then, you know, the news out of there is
not good.
Not good. They're like, part of our house exploded. Our car was destroyed yesterday.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't have power, but we're alive.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
yeah. Yeah. For now. Yeah.
For now.
It's
so, on that uplifting note.
Yeah. So, glad to be where we're at.
Yes. Very glad to be here. Very glad to be here with you.
I have your book, Jennifer, right there.
What? You do?
That out.
I didn't. I can't see. I'm not wearing my glasses.
I can because it's Japanese box, but if you hadn't pointed it out, I wouldn't notice because it is. I
can kind of make out
the shape of the body that's on the front. Yeah. And even with my glasses, I can't see that it says Japanese box, but knowing that it's there,
then I'm like, I can't.
Just arrived.
Yours
is next.
Mine is not Japanese box. there's no obligation to read rom-coms. It's fine. No, I was going to say for next week, though, we have horror next week, do we not?
Like, yes, we have House of Hearts.
As like, okay, we're alive for now, but everything for next week will not be alive because it's haunted.
Yeah, right? Everything's haunted. Okay. Next week we have Heather Doherty, the editor and the mastermind behind House of Haunts, which is this amazing anthology that comes out Friday. It includes stories from a ton of amazing people, including
Jennifer and
including me. I wasn't even going to mention me. I was. But friends of Vox Vomitus, such as Clay McLeod Chapman and forward by Josh Mallerman. So, and a million other amazing authors. So Heather is going to be here next week, along with a small handful of the authors
from special friends, little friends.
We'll talk all things, Hale House and, the most comprehensive book about a fictional haunting that Josh Mallerman has ever read. It's quote, not mine. So until then, thank you everybody for watching live. Thank you for those of you watching the replay or just listening to us. We hope you have a great week. And David, thank you again.
Hey, thank you so much. It was a blast.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.